Today is Wednesday, November 25th, 2020. This is part 5 of a Grand Canyon oral history with Pat Gredigan, spelled G-R-E-D-I-A-G-I-N. My name is Tom Martin. Good evening, Pat. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great. Pat, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the phone?
Yes, you have my permission.
Thank you. Last time, the end of part 4, you'd mentioned quite a bit about your experiences at Phantom Ranch. And at one point, you got invited on a river trip. Do you remember how that invitation happened?
Yeah, and I can get into that in a minute, but I had forgotten to mention that earlier, I think it was 1982 when I was still working in Canyonlands, I had done a private Grand Canyon winter trip, and so I thought maybe I'd start with that being my first time on the river, and then when I was working at Grand Canyon would be the next times on the river. Does that sound okay?
Absolutely. Wait a minute. So let me make sure I understand this. In 1982, you did a private, also called a do-it-yourself or non-commercial river trip in the winter in Grand Canyon?
Yeah, right.
Those were rare.
Right.
Wow. Do you remember the months?
Well, I think it was, definitely was in February, and I don't know if it was a little bit of January in February, a little bit of, or February and then a little March.
Okay.
But I know February was a good chunk of it, and I know that it was cold down there. In part because the shadows of the rim, you don't think about it in the fairer weather season, but when the sun's lower, sometimes it really doesn't come over the rim to hit parts of the river. And if you're down there and the weather's cool and you don't have any direct sun on you, it just is like a little refrigerator box. So
yeah,
and we had some cool times, but we also had some nicer warm days when we were in the sun.
Did you just call Grand Canyon and get the permit?
So three of us from the Canyonlands River crew were on the trip, and in my memory, it was Glenn Sherrill, one of the river rangers, who got the permit. I don't know how he went about and got it. He might have just picked it up kind of on short notice because it was such an off season that I don't think there were, it might have been available, but I don't really know how he got it. I just know that he was like, hey, you got a Grand Canyon permit, want to go? And I'm like, sure.
Wow.
Tom Cox went, another Canyonlands River Ranger, and Ed Forner and I, so four out of five of the Canyonlands River Rangers went on that trip.
How do you spell Glenn's last name?
It's Sherrill, S-H-E-R-R-I-L-L.
Thank you. And Tom and Ed?
Yeah, Tom Cox and Ed Forner.
Okay.
And I think there might have been some other people, another person or two. I don't really remember that part.
Okay.
It seems like there's more than four of us. By the way, I do have good notes. I'm on, as we're doing these interviews, I'm on a year-long road trip away from home, and I don't have access to all my notes, but I do have notes at home that have a lot of the details of things I'm telling you about. So
okay,
if there was ever a question, I can look things up and be pretty precise with a lot of it.
Fun. Well, we'll hold that thought when you get home.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So if there was the four of us, let's see, that was four of us, right, plus maybe another couple, as I say, I can't remember. And I think it might have even been a little longer than a 21-day trip.
Could have been,
might have
yep.
23-day trip, or?
Could have been 25 or 30.
Could have been 25. I don't think it was 30, but it was a long trip. We were all, well, I was, probably three out of the four of us were not working at the time. Two of us were seasonals, and one was a subject a permanent but part-time, not working the total year.
Okay.
So I think time wasn't an issue, and we just said, okay, let's go.
Wow, great. Did you get a chance to row a boat?
I did not row a boat. Well, yeah, I rowed a boat. No, I was basically a passenger with Ed's boat.
Okay.
I'm sure I rowed a little bit then, but he really did all the significant rapids.
Okay.
And it was his boat that we were in, and I was just ballasting the bailer.
And I'm just rocking back on my heels thinking about this. No dry suit, no splash jacket kind of stuff.
We had wetsuits.
Oh, brr.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, wetsuits are meant to be like in the water.
Right.
And you
but
know,
if you're getting splashed and stuff at all, they work, you know, reasonably well there too.
It sounds like it would be freezing. And you have to bail the boat. That means you're standing in cold water.
Right.
Oh my.
Yep.
Hmm. Yep. This is a hardy crew.
Yeah. So I do remember being cold. I do remember that I very seldom bathed. I do remember that I washed my hair about 3 times out of, you know, at least 21 days. Because mostly it was just kind of chilly and the days were short.
Yep.
And so there was not a lot of direct sun on us, but I don't want it to be a black box trip, because there was times in different parts of the Grand Canyon where you do get a lot of sun in the winter. I don't remember. We probably had some rainstorm or two, but mostly I remember being cold because of the shadow effect from the cliffs in areas. But then at other times we would have had sun on us, and that always would have felt really nice.
Sure, sure. Did you guys do some hiking?
Yeah, I remember we went into Deer Creek Falls. We
okay.
went up the trail and into the narrows there, and we actually climbed down in the narrows.
Oh my.
Without ropes, and so I don't know exactly how we did that, but we skinnied down some rock. I can kind of remember.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. So we were down in there. I don't think we went very far down in it. We just
right.
went down and then crawled back out.
Mm-hmm.
I know we did that. We went to Thunder River. I think we went to Nanka Week. So we would have done a lot of the, you know, hour or maybe hour or 2 hour kinds of hikes out of the standard hikes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We did those.
Did you see anybody else on the river that you remember?
I don't remember seeing other people. We, you know, we might have seen someone here or there, but I don't remember either way.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm going to say, I think we went down to Pierce Ferry on that trip. So that probably was like a 25-day trip at least to get down there. And at that time, boy, my memory of that part is kind of dim, but it seems like, I think we had to row across.
It would have been a lot of rowing on flat water. Yeah.
Yeah, I better just abandon that whole notion. I think we went down there, but I don't have a good enough memory to say we really did, and I don't know how we would have done. Oh, I think we got it picked up by a boat.
Okay.
The boat would have come upstream and picked us up.
All right.
At the bottom of the river and taken us back out to the ferry.
Okay.
I think we did do that.
That would have saved you lots of, you know, a couple of days of rowing. Sure.
Yeah, because we didn't row. We didn't row across.
Okay.
I'm sure of that. I think we got picked up by a boat.
Okay. Neat. Did this? You weren't rowing, but I just wonder whether Ed or Glenn or Tom or anyone else who was rowing had any thoughts on comparing Grand Canyon to Cataract Canyon.
Boy, I don't know. You know, they're kind of different in the sense that Cataract is all compressed into one little section.
Yeah.
And the Grand Canyon, you have rapids and then no rapids and then rapid and then no rapids. So the tempo is different.
Mm-hmm. Very
I
much
know
so.
That we were all, it was all, I think it was everybody's first trip. And so we were scouting all the rapids and, you know, intimidated by horn and crystal and lava and, and I think we probably had some guidebooks that talked a little bit about, well, you want to run right here or run left. We would have kind of been using anybody's tips we could have gotten a hold of, plus then just looking at it going, oh, it looks like we need to do that.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we compared the rapids one to the other, and I don't remember what our water level was. It was mostly I had the sense of a big adventure.
Nice.
It was the Grand Canyon, which has got this reputation, and we were doing it, and we were all compatible and got along well, and it was a big adventure, yeah.
Yeah. Did you stop at Phantom Ranch and walk up and say, hi, the Canyonlands crew is here?
Right. No, I don't think we... I'm sure we stopped at Phantom, but I don't think we announced ourselves as anything like that.
How many boats did you have? Do you remember?
I don't know.
Okay.
We would have had maybe three, but honestly, that would mean we probably had six people, and I can't remember who the other ones would have been besides the four of us. So.
Okay.
So yeah, that's all about all I can tell you about that trip.
82 in the winter. That's good.
Yeah. And then the next time, so there was three, I think I did pieces of three river trips when I worked in the Grand Canyon. I'm not sure what the order of them was.
Okay.
And I don't even remember much about what I'm going to say is the third one, which is the one I can't remember very well. One of them was this walk down Nankoweap. So I was in Grand Canyon from somewhere in 86 to about summer 88, and this was a fall trip. It was a November trail crew trip. So Kim Crumbo was, I guess he was the lead guy in the river crew there at the time, and he would coordinate with river crew in the Grand Canyon as well as not river crew, trail crew.
Okay.
Trail crew from other parks that had some river skills. I don't know, you know, how they knew each other, but he got trail crew guys from other, from outside the park to come in and help with inside the park trail crew and go down and remediate social trailing and try and to get the trails along the river corridor under control in terms of all the social trailing that was taking place, or if trails were going in places where it wasn't a very good idea to reroute them. And so he had this crew of guys, as I remember it, who were doing trail crew work, and he had a volunteer named Ginger Harmon, who I'll mention probably later in another piece of my story, who hiked in, and I don't know how they got to know her. She was a bit older than all of us, probably at least 10 to 15 years older than me, probably 15 years older than I was.
Okay.
So we, several of us, I think the trail crew, or what the Grand Canyon river trips would do is they'd pick up some, they'd launch somewhere, people would get off at a certain point, and other people would come in. People would get off at another point. Other people would come in. So they circulated people on and off the trip to let non-river crew people get a sense of what the river corridor was like so that they had that background.
Oh, that's a neat idea. So when you hiked in at Nankoweap, spelled what, Nankoweap, something like that?
I think so, yeah.
When you hiked in, the people were hiking out.
Yeah, I don't know if they went out Nankoweap or if they went out somewhere. I think we ended up at Tanner to work.
Okay. Well, that would make sense. That's easier.
Yeah, I don't remember if they... See, we would have got dropped off or had a vehicle there, so it would have made sense to have people hike out there because then they could have picked up the vehicle that we went out there in.
Exactly.
I don't remember that the outbound crew. I know we hiked in. It was kind of foggy and cool and, well, especially up higher when we started. It was cool and kind of damp, I remember, and I don't remember much about the hike down other than we hiked down. So you said there were some bad places, and I don't remember those.
Yeah, that trail has a one little section where there's a cliff, and you're on the top of the cliff walking along the trail on a slope that goes right to the cliff, and that can be a little unnerving for people.
Yeah. I don't remember...
Okay.
I don't remember being unnerved. I don't remember that spot. I don't remember being unnerved. I typically don't get unnerved.
Bingo.
On
okay.
Trails, so
great.
I don't know what the situation
You would have never noticed it.
Yeah. I don't remember it.
Okay.
Ginger hiked down and maybe two or three others. So maybe there was four of us that hiked down there. And we joined the river crew, and I think it was for maybe a week. I really don't even know where I got off. It was either, I think it might have been Phantom, that they just dropped us off at Phantom and picked up more people there.
Okay.
And I think we did work at Nankoweap, and I think we did work at Tanner.
Okay.
To get rid of social trailing. And I remember just being so impressed how they would cut chunks of prickly pear and sort of, and then dry them out a little bit so that they got a little crust on them,
mm-hmm.
so they wouldn't rot in the soil. And then after they had dried for a week or so, it seems like they would plant them in the ground. Now, I don't know if they had the chance to let them dry that much, or they just put them in the ground when we were there, because I'm not sure they had a follow-up trip right away. But I thought that was a brilliant way to get rid of some.
So they would take the cactus and cut it up and plant it in this social trail.
Yep.
So that people would stay on a trail and not make four trails.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it was to eliminate trails that weren't necessary and just were scarring the landscape and causing erosion.
Yeah.
So, and they would move bushes and or plants and grass and try and naturalize it a little bit with
mm-hmm.
Whatever they could to discourage traffic. And it was good, honest work down there, working on social trails. So I think it was Nankoweap and Tanner, and then I guess that I probably got off at Phantom after a week on the river or maybe something like that. So that was one trip. Another trip, let me think about this. Another trip, I hiked down Havasu to the river.
Okay.
We slept overnight somewhere along the line, I think. I think we camped out. Do you know who J.T. Reynolds is?
Yes.
So he also hiked down, so there was maybe four or five of us that hiked down there, and J.T. was one of them. I don't remember who the others were. I had become friends with J.T. when I went to what they call Ranger Skills in 1984. And that was at the Albright training session in the Grand Canyon. So I was in Canyonlands, and I went there for 2 or 4 weeks worth of training. And JT was one of the instructors, and we just kind of became friends at that point. So I knew JT when we were hiking down.
Cool.
And I remember him there, and I remember he was very interested in learning how to row. And so when we got to the river, he rowed a raft, and I was somehow in it, and I had, been a cataract ranger by that time and had a sense of how you row, and he did a fine job, but I remember being his passenger while he rowed, and I remember Kim Crumbo telling me to not be shouting suggestions at him, which I wasn't doing, I don't think.
Right.
But I think he just recognized that it's never really more to give people suggestions when they're in the middle of the river, unless you want to just, tend to your oars.
Yeah. Look to your oars, Bert.
Right. something like that. But yeah. I do remember being advised to just, let him do it. He'll be fine. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he was fine. And I don't know where we came out. Maybe we went to Diamond Creek. I don't know if I would have gone that far with him. But maybe, because I don't know where else I would have gotten out at.
Whitmore, I guess you could have gone out that way or up to
Toroweep. Yeah, Whitmore. So I think that I must have gone all the way out there with that trip.
Okay.
And there was, I think, a third trip. So there was a time where I was asked to go to Havasu and count, camp at Havasu for 4 or 5 days and just witness what kind of use there was going on there and document it. How many boats came in, how many people came in, what time they came in. And I think it was for the river management plan that they were looking at updating or something like that.
Yeah, which updated in 1989, so that would make sense.
Right. So they wanted to get some ideas of what the use was there and whether it was overcrowded and, you know, when people came in. And so I was at Havasu for several nights. I don't know how I got there, and I don't know how I left there. I just remember being there. And what I remember was there was a flash flood that came down.
Oh, wow.
It must have been the middle of summer, basically probably July or August. And I don't know. I don't think I set up a tent. I never was big with tents anyway. I just, you know, it's warm sleeping out. And I kind of have this idea that it started raining with a thunderstorm, and I'm looking for a little piece of overhanging rock that I could put under there. And I waited it out, and the Havasu came up and flashed and ran just tomato soup red. And then it receded, and there was fish that were left in little bits of puddles in places where there normally wouldn't be puddles.
Wow.
It was pretty exciting to me to kind of be there for the whole thing and watch it, and then it just went away. So I remember that clearly, but I don't remember how I got there or how I left. And at one point I was thinking, well, maybe that was when I hiked down Havasu, but I'm pretty sure that I was in the boat with JT. I know JT hiked down. Mm-hmm. I know I hiked down Havasu with JT, and I'm pretty certain I was in the boat with JT, so that would not have meshed with me staying there for 4 days at that time.
Okay.
But again, I have information on that probably at home that I could clarify.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Those are the memories I have of the three times I had a chance to go on a river patrol.
You mentioned Ginger Harmon. Did you have a story about her?
Well, later, like 3 years later, when I'm no longer in Grand Canyon and I'm off and traveling around the world, yes, I do have a story about her. Do you want me to save that for later? Or?
Yeah, if it fits later, we'll do that.
It'll fit later, yeah.
And then JT, do you have any other stories about JT?
Well, he ended up, he went on a private Yampa trip that I had once. I remember inviting JT because he liked river stuff. And so I remember he was picking up driftwood on the Yampa trip, and he was carving Kachina dolls.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you got to carve one for me because you're on my trip and you're picking up this driftwood with that. And he was in my boat, I think. And he said, oh, yeah, I will. And I never got one.
Oh.
Yeah. I really liked JT a lot. And I don't think I have. He was just, he was fun to go do stuff with. Like, well, the river trips is basically what I did with him. When we were at Ranger Skills, I don't know, it was Halloween or something. This would have been 1984 when I was in Canyonlands and on training there. I remember we'd have dance parties or something like that, and he'd come to the dance party, and he just was fun. So that's my main memory of JT.
Cool. One of the very few African Americans in the Park Service.
Right.
Certainly in Western parks. Were you aware of any other African Americans in any other service units? Were any people of color in Canyonlands?
No. I don't think worked with, when I was in Big Bend later, I think there was a person of color. She might have been more Hispanic, maybe a mix, but basically no. I never had black people in the Park Service. I know there are a few because I've heard of them or seen reference to them, but
right. Yeah,
it's pretty unusual.
Yeah, a real trailblazer. And I don't think his path was easy.
No. I don't really know how his path was, so I can't comment on that other than in general you would guess that it would be problematic. But the only other trip I'll mention in the Grand Canyon right now is a trip that I did in 1988, right after I left the Grand Canyon. I had gotten on I think the Grand Canyon at that time was just doing a list where you'd sign up saying, I want to do a Grand Canyon trip sometime. And the list over the years got quite long, to like it was a 5 or 8 or longer year waiting list.
Yep.
But
waiting, the waiting list.
The waiting list, yep. Right. So So my name, I don't know when I put in, 3-4 years before, 5 years before, but my name came up in 1988, and I got offered a river trip. So I made plans to do it and had invited friends. And then I ended up at the end of my Grand Canyon. Well, I was working in the Grand Canyon, and I started applying for another job. Again, I wanted to try and get up to that GS7 level, and I had heard that there were some GS7 levels that the BLM was filling.
Oh.
And it was just kind of general ranger stuff, but they were just paying a grade higher, basically, than Canyon, or the Park Service was.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied for the job. It was in Las Vegas at a place called Red Rock Canyon Recreation Area, I think is the full name, just on the west side of Las Vegas. And I ended up getting the job to be a road patrol BLM ranger there. And it was kind of like being a park ranger in a park because it was a small area. But I can get into that a little bit more later.
Yeah.
Other than just when I got there a month before my river trip, I had to ask my boss, or maybe even when he offered me the job, I was like, well, I had this Grand Canyon River trip I've been waiting for 4 years or whatever that time spell was, and my name's up, and can I have 3 weeks off shortly after I start? And he was a good guy, and he said, sure. So
nice.
I was able to get the new job, move to Las Vegas, and then leave shortly thereafter to go do a fall trip. It was probably September or October.
Nice.
Probably late September or maybe October start in the Grand Canyon with river friends. I don't think anybody from the Canyonlands crew was on that, but other friends were. And my sister rode in my boat for the whole time. So I took my sister, who my family hadn't done rafting in our youth or during our time as a family together. And so this was something that was it wasn't her normal. She wasn't a rafter. So going down the Grand Canyon with us was something different for her. And it was really special for both of us to be able to do it together. I rode a 14-foot non-bailing Miwok.
Oh, wow.
And
what fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And we had a great trip. I'm still friends with a couple of the people that were on that trip.
Who's that?
Well, my friend Patty and Lee Gillette, who I still boat with. Lee had been a BLM river ranger in Desolation Canyon and was hanging around Moab in the early 80s. And Patty had been working for Fish and Wildlife Service doing endangered fish surveys along the Colorado River. And so I had seen or met them in Canyonlands when I was there. And so it was so common for young people in their 20s who were seasonal here, seasonal there, to just go off and do trips together or get together. And so there was this pool of ready playmates, basically, to go do fun stuff with.
Cool.
And so they were on the trip, and my friend Mary Lynn, I think she was on that trip, but maybe I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I think she was on that trip. Bill Persons, who later worked for Larry Stevens, I think, doing fish stuff in the Grand Canyon.
How do you spell Bill's last name?
P-E-R-S-O-N-S. He must have been up in Canyonlands a little bit because he somehow got into the mix and was on that trip.
Okay.
Bill Noonan, N-O-O-N-A-N, with Fish and Wildlife Service, also doing endangered fish species really out of Gypsum Canyon, mostly at the bottom of Cataract.
Okay.
He went on the trip. And another fellow named Ron Ryle was on the trip, who I can't remember how he fit into the picture. He, I think, was a friend of somebody's. He wasn't a personal friend of mine. at that time.
How do you spell his last name?
I think it's R-Y-L-E.
Okay.
And he took his dad
on the
trip. And I don't remember his dad's name. So I think that was the group, but... Yeah, I think that was the group. We probably had four boats.
Okay.
I think that was it. There was somebody else, maybe...
Four heavy boats.
Yeah.
So 3 weeks, a 14-footer.
Right.
You know, even if the other three were 18.
And I had a little dinky cooler. I don't know how I managed it, but... Well, we did it. So I did that trip in 1988. It was a great trip. And then I didn't do any more Grand Canyon trips for quite a while until after I retired. So we can leave that for later.
Yeah, yeah. What do you remember? One or two highlights from that 1988 trip?
Well, you always remember the flips. Patty and Lee flipped in Hermit, but it was not a turn up right back over.
Yeah.
I remember that Lee had some little speakers or something, and. He was playing reggae music when we were rigging and de-rigging, and so we sort of made the pun with reggae and rigging, and it would be the de-reggae music or the de-rigging music and the rigging or the reggae music. So every time we were rigging and de-rigging the boats, we put on the reggae music. And what else? Don't remember any other particulars. It just, again, was fine weather. There might have been some rain in there somewhere, but I just love fall trips because they're usually so pleasant.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah, I remember that my skin got so dry in that water. It just dried out, and I ran out of some kind of hand lotion, so I started putting Crisco oil on my legs because they were just so itchy, flaky.
Wow.
I remember getting into the kitchen oil and putting it on my legs because they were dry.
You must have had quite the suntan.
I had a great tan, yeah. And now I'm paying for it.
Oh, dear. Aren't we all? Yeah.
Yeah, right. I really don't remember much else that was particularly, in particular there. If I go through and read my notes, I'd go, oh, yeah, we did this or we did that. But we did the standard hikes and... Just had a good time.
Nice. And did you stop at Phantom and walk up there and say, hey, I've got a job now with the BLM?
Well, that's something that I forgot about. When I worked at Phantom, the way we got our food down there, by the way, was every time before I went hike down to Phantom, I would take a grocery bag, a paper bag of groceries, to the mule barn, the Park Service mule barn, and the packer would go down once a week and would haul down whoever stuff was in the mule barn to haul down to Phantom or Indian Garden. So my food would get hauled down to Phantom by the packer, and I could send stuff out with the packer. If I took the boom box down there or something, I could take it down with the packer, or the packer would take it down. I could send it out later if I wanted on top. But it was limited service, so you had to get your timing down right. So I sent down a whole bunch of beer, and I had the packer haul the beer down, and I stashed it in the closet at the Phantom Ranger Station, and then we went and picked it up so we didn't have to carry all the beer from the top. That was how we managed with smaller boats. We just picked up some supplies at Phantom.
What a great idea.
I probably sent some dry food, you know, some canned food or something like that down there as well. So we resupplied at Phantom, which...
Nice.
I forgot about that. Yep.
Very clever.
Yeah.
Huh. Very nice. Okay. Then, thinking about moving forward, but not kind of looking over our shoulders as we do, 1988, you wanted a little more kind of law enforcement exposure. Oh, no, the GS-7. You wanted the pay raise.
Right. I wanted a pay raise. I think my first job might have been GS-3, I think. And then I'd been a 4 for a very short time. And then I was a 5 for forever, like most of 10 years.
Wow.
And so I thought, I want to be a 7, and I want to be something, making some more money somewhere along the line here.
Okay.
So So BLM, I don't know how, they just paid their Rangers more. They were getting their Ranger program going.
Okay.
And they paid, what was a GS5 in the Park Service, it was a GS7 in the BLM. And basically they were tempting the park, National Park Rangers to come over and work for them, because they were trying to get their staffing ranger levels numbers up. And so basically they were stealing from the Park Service, which was fine. You know, they were paying more. So
right.
I know several people that decided they'd go to work for BLM. And I decided I would as well. And
okay.
So I applied for that job, which was on the outskirts of Las Vegas. I got the job. I ended up moving there in like July. It was hot. Maybe it was August. I remember being kind of, after a bit, enjoying it in a sense, in this sense. It was such a change of pace from spending most of my time at Phantom. It was like night and day from being very remote at the bottom of the Grand Canyon to being in Las Vegas, open 24 hours a day. It didn't matter when I got off shift. I could go get groceries. I didn't have to drive for 2 hours to go get groceries. Well,
right.
I guess I could get groceries on the South Rim, too. But
yeah, but to take in a movie or go to a hardware store
right.
simply clothes shopping, it's a couple-hour drive to Flagstaff.
Right. So I kind of was enjoying all of the things that I could do so easily and so readily while I was in Las Vegas when I first got there.
Mm.
I had a new job. And it was a road patrol in this area. That was a day use area, Red Rock Canyon. And I had coworkers that I enjoyed working with. I rented a room in a house that a BLM guy who was their wild horse and burro program manager, I think,
oh, wow.
out of this office. And so there was kind of a main BLM office in Las Vegas that had a lot of different functions or had people doing different types of jobs all gathered there, and that was where our headquarters was, and the ultimate supervision came out of there. And I had heard that he was looking for roommates, and he already had a three-bedroom ranch house. He had a woman that he rented one of his rooms to, and so I asked him if he would rent a room to me, because I didn't want to spend all my, you know, I didn't want to rent, I could have rented an apartment, I guess, but I just was always into saving money and thought I didn't know anybody in Las Vegas. This is a good way to get to know some people. So I rented a room with him and lived with in that household the entire time that I was there, which was really only about 20 months maybe. I was there less than 2 years, something between a year and a half and 2 years.
How did that job work? Did who ran your dispatch? Did BLM run that?
I don't think BLM would have run it. I think we used Las Vegas services for that, because it wouldn't have been worth BLM's time to set up a whole dispatch office. But I don't really remember. I know that we did call Metro. I think that's what Las Vegas police were called. We called them for backup if we needed something.
I was going to say, who backed you up?
Yeah, it was the Las Vegas Police Department.
Okay.
And
Red Rock Canyon, is that, it's a gorgeous area. The climbers are, it's a big climbing place.
Right, another big climbing place, like Joshua Tree was a big climbing place.
Is it a state park now?
There is a state park that's kind of embedded in Red Rock on the south end of it.
Okay.
Somebody's name, like Florist Lamb or some, I can't remember the name, but.
Okay.
There's a state park there, but there is a part that BLM totally manages as a day use area with some canyons you can go walking up. Not great distances. You don't do great backpacking trips there.
Hmm. Okay.
But day hiking and rock climbing and just a natural area on the edge of Las Vegas where people could get out of the city and go have a picnic.
Nice. Just
that kind of area.
I think it would be pretty busy. Just because of the huge population center of Vegas with tourists coming and going all the time.
Right. So there were It was busy. I don't remember if we had traffic jams kind of busy, but I'm pretty certain it was just day use, and we closed the gates every night.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of limited all the overtime or the you know, trouble comes out at night a lot.
Yeah.
And so that was greatly reduced because we would close the gates. I remember we would drive through and do a sweep and get cars out.
Mm-hmm.
And shut things down. So it was, I don't have, I'm trying to think of how to give you any details on that job. I had a patrol rig. I don't remember too much trouble. We had a little bit of, did we have climbing training? I can't remember if we even had climbing training there.
Hmm.
See, I think they had climbers out of Las Vegas that were come and do search and rescue stuff, I think. I don't have very good memories of what I did there in particular, other than driving around, talking to people. I can't even remember what little minor crimes I might have written a citation for, but it was nothing, I don't remember anything big happening there. Again, if I look through notes, it might jog my memory, but, I don't have too much to tell you about that job.
Okay.
Other than after a while, the allure of 24 hours availability of anything I wanted anywhere, you know, in Las Vegas, that started dimming, and I started realizing or feeling that I would like to go back and work in a park again, because there was not a community in the BLM staff. So in Canyonlands, there had been a wonderful group of people that I would spend time with, go on river trips, private trips with, you know, go on hikes in days off with. So there was a lot of camaraderie amongst seasonals in Canyonlands. In the Grand Canyon, I made friends with some people and went off on a ski trip with Barb and Dave Sherrow and I forgot her name right now, but Jane Hendrick and some other people. Martha Hahn was on that trip. So there were people that I did stuff with even in Grand Canyon, although I had less chance to, because I was down in the bottom of the canyon so much, to get to know so many people. But in BLM, in Las Vegas, everybody went home to their home at night.
Oh.
And there really wasn't much, I didn't really come up with too many pals there. And the people that I lived with, that I shared the house with, were fine people, but they weren't the people that I would seek out to go do stuff with. They just, you know, had other interests. My the guy that owned the house was into horses, and I wasn't really a horse person. And the young woman, I can't even remember what she might have been interested in. I think she kind of stuck around the house a lot.
Hmm.
So after a while, I thought, okay, I don't want to go back to working in a park somewhere. What I decided to do instead of looking for another job then, I had thought for a while that I wanted to do more extensive overseas travel. And when I decided that I was going to move out of Las Vegas, I thought, well, this might be a great time to take a break. And so what I ended up doing was quitting, because I felt that I could always go back when I got done with this travel that I wanted to do and get another job with the Park Service by just applying. And I thought I had enough years in service and experience that somebody somewhere along the line would hire me back in.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit the BLM in the fall of 1989, maybe I wasn't even there a year and a half, but, well, anyway, I'd have to do the math on that.
Right.
I quit in the fall of 89, and this is where the Ginger Harmon part comes in. I decided I was going to travel for a year, and I came up overseas for a year.
Wow.
And I came up with my own itinerary. I was doing a solo trip. So I said I want to go to Australia and New Zealand, kind of going with where the weather was nice.
Okay.
Africa, then Europe, and spread that out over a year. And then I told friends, oh, I'm going to be here and here and here and here. Do you want to join me? So some people did join me on the trip during that. Actually, it was 10 months that I was overseas. But Ginger Harmon had, she, by the way, was, I think, one of the founders of Great Old Broads.
Okay.
And she was connected with Sierra Club. And she had been doing some hikes and treks in Nepal, like numerous of them. I don't know how many. But she had sponsored, I think she had some money somehow from somewhere. And okay. She had sponsored some constructions of schools or supporting schools or wells, one of the two. I can't even remember now if it was wells or schools or what. And she would go back every now and then and do a trek in Nepal and kind of check on whatever the project she was funding was. And so she had made friends with these trail crew guys that had gone on that river trip that I was on and was putting together, hey, who wants to go trek in Nepal?
Wow.
And so one of the guys named Ed Rossetti, I think he was at a Glacier trail crew.
That's right.
I remember, do you know the name?
I want you to tell me everything you remember about Eddie.
All I know is he was on that trail crew river trip, and that's where I first met him, and maybe Ginger might have known him from before somewhere.
Wow.
And he went on this Nepal trip with Ginger that I ended up going on, and there was two people from, or maybe two or four people from Canada. I don't know where she got to know them from. Do you know Ken Kehoe?
No.
Another trail crew guy. He worked Forest Service mostly.
Okay.
I think he was on that. I can't remember if he was on that November Canyonlands trip or not.
K-E-H-O?
No, K, I think it's K-E-H-O-E, I think.
Okay.
So those two guys were on the trip. Some people from Canada were on the trip. Ginger was the one that had a contact in Nepal that was going to put this trip together. It was a month trekking in Nepal. So I had put my own little trip together that I wanted to do in my head that started in New Zealand and Australia, and I kind of went around the world in that direction with what I wanted to do on my trip. And then I heard about Ginger's trip, and I realized as I could front load my own travels with her trip for a month.
Nice.
So I timed my exit from Las Vegas and BLM so that I could start with her trip and then continue on with my own travel plans.
Nice.
And I guess I could probably get into that next time.
Yeah. That sounds good. Where are we at? What time are we? No, we've been doing this about 50 minutes. Okay.
Well, I can go into it now if you feel like you want to continue. I just
yeah, we clock. No, this would be good. Yeah, I'm up for it. I'm like, all right, Eddie Rossetti ended up meeting a woman named Michelle Madlin, and Michelle was a bear ranger and a glacier, and she taught violin, and she was from Los Alamos, and they ended up getting married, and Eddie then went back to school, left the service, and got a physical therapy degree.
Oh my God, he comes back as a whole nother realm, huh?
Yeah, and they have kids, and just a great, great couple. Just brilliant, brilliant people doing great things with their kids.
Yeah. And was he? Is he in the Grand Canyon?
No.
How do you know him?
We met him because my wife and I know Michelle, the bear ranger.
Okay.
And we did a Grand Canyon River trip with her, and that's how we met her. So
okay. it's just such a web when you start talking to people.
It's a roundabout, circles and roundabouts, and it's like, wait a minute, how do we do that? So you started in Nepal then. You left Vegas and flew to Nepal.
Yeah, you know, I think I had 3 or 4 weeks of parking all my belongings somewhere and kind of getting ready. And then basically, yeah, I flew to Nepal and joined the rest of the people in Kathmandu. Ginger had, so the trip was kind of on the cheaper side than normal because she didn't go through a middle person. She knew people in Nepal who could organize the trip.
Fun.
And get the guides and get the Sherpas and all that kind of stuff. So that also was appealing to me. You know, it was basically a good deal for a, I think we were on the trail for 28 days.
Wow.
So we met there and did a trip that was around, I think, Manaslu. Does that sound familiar? It's the mountain range. I think it's Manaslu. It's the mountain range just to the east, just to the east of the Annapurna.
Okay.
Circuit, I think. And so we basically went up into the Himalayas and then a little bit towards the east on the, or towards the west on the backside and came back out and down the Annapurna Circuit. So that was our route. And we had people who were the kind of the guides and coordinated things, and then there were Sherpas who carried our stuff and the tents and all that stuff. All we had to do was carry our backpacks,
okay,
our day packs, and we did the hike for 28 days. There was a great line. So I ended up sharing a tent with a woman named Wendy. Boy, I can't remember her last name right now, but she ended up being working at the botanical garden. She was a botanist.
Oh, wow.
She worked at the botanical gardens in Phoenix. And when we left, we were in the lowlands and the banana belt, and you slowly gain elevation. And by the time you're up in elevation, you're more into something that feels like it could be a Tibetan-type culture.
Hmm.
And we were in that for quite a while. And then as we dropped back down into the lower lands, there were lots of kids that would like to come up and say, you know, we want a tan, we want candy, and they'd always be sniffing and, you know, kind of have snotty noses.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could just remember, like, on day 24 or something, when we're dropping back down into that zone where there were more people and it was warmer climate, and these kids start coming up to us with the sniffy noses, and Wendy said, "Ah, so great to be back in sniffleization."
Yes.
I just thought that was a very clever little pun.
Oh, indeed.
She
must have been in seventh heaven going through that biological range of vegetation.
I was, yeah. I mean, just the whole, I really enjoyed the upland country. More so, I've never been much of a jungle person. I like more arid landscapes. And as we got higher, it got drier, it's more arid.
Yeah.
And then you had these this Tibetan culture. It wasn't very densely populated, but there was always little villages and stupas and different prayer flags and stuff. It was I quite enjoyed it.
Fun.
So, but one of those small world stories is, as we came out, and I can't remember the name of the town that we ended up in, and then from there we had to get a bus back to Kathmandu. And so we're in some kind of remote town, but I think it did service the Annapurna Circuit. Is it Annapurna, or I think that's right.
K2, yeah. Everest, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff
up
there.
Yeah, I think it was the Annapurna Circuit that's real commonly done there. So I think this town serviced them, but we're getting on this local bus to go back to Kathmandu, and there's Westerners standing in line to get on this bus, and I get this tap on my shoulder, and it was this river runner I knew from Canyonlands named Gino. I think his last name was Boyle, B-O-Y-L-E, and I said, "Gino, what are you doing here?" And he was, I don't know what he was doing exactly, except he said, "Well, wait till you see who's with me." And I turned, and Sherry Griffiths was there.
Oh, my gosh.
And Sherry Griffiths had run, at the time was operating Sherry Griffiths River Expeditions in Canyonlands.
Mm-hmm.
she had dated my boss in Canyonlands, Jim Braggs, but now was dating Gino, and I think they were just on a trip, as far as I know. But anyway, it was so weird to run into somebody from Moab, in Nepal, right on the bus. So Sherry and I rode the bus back together, or sat on the seats together as we rode back to Kathmandu, and you know, chattered the whole way and caught up on what they were doing there and what I was doing there and who was doing what in Moab and all that kind of stuff. So that takes us back to Kathmandu. And do you want me to keep going, or should I?
Let's see. Yeah, we could stop here at Kathmandu.
Okay.
And so this is Kathmandu, and this is 1989, the fall, winter of?
Yes, right. So I think the trip was most of November in Nepal, and so early December, the end of November, early December is when we had finished the trip up.
All right. So we know kind of where to pick the thread up.
Right.
Great. Cool. All right. Well, with that, this will conclude part 5, oral history interview with Pat Gredigan. Today is Wednesday. It's November 25th, 2020, and my name is Tom Martin. Pat, thank you so very much.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.